playoffs. It's that time of year again, and five of the teams that we cover are moving on to the postseason. How do the brackets shake out? Who's at home and who's on the road? You've got questions, we've got answers. Rivalry week forced a split amongst the big schools, and only one small school came out on top. Our teams finished the week with a 3-4 record. It's not often that they're below 500, but hey, as we start to create more rivalries, someone's got to win and someone's got to lose. Plenty of teams, plenty of talent, and plenty of action. Brett Quintan with the always growing and always entertaining Elite C-Town Rivals podcast, where high school sports is always on the agenda. Ralph Amzit and Chili join me as always, so reach out to us via Twitter. You know we'll tweet back. We love the engagement. Visit us on ArizonaVarsity.com, and of course, give a like to our Facebook page. You'll love it. Let's start off with the Valley Christian Trojans. They were beaten soundly by the Castile Colts, 42-9. The Trojans actually got on the board first with a 45-yard field goal, but it was 21-3 at the half, and too much. Gunner Cruz led the way for Castile. Valley Christian finishes the season 3-7. Tough year for Jeff Rutledge's club. As always, we thank you and Brian Winfrey for giving us access to your program, and we look forward to working with you guys in the near future. As for the Castile Colts, well, fellas, it's the rematch. The Colts finished the season at 9-1 and are seeded 9th in the Division 3A playoff bracket. Their lone loss was at Yuma Catholic, 33-7 on the last day of September, and that's who they'll face this Friday. Ralph, we know Castile has a lot of firepower, and they've been perfect against everybody except the Shamrocks. What does Spencer Stowes need to do differently to leave Yuma with a W?
Well, I mean, they started quickly. I think they took that 7-0 lead down at Yuma Catholic, but ultimately they're going to have some more success in the passing game. You can't get down to Yuma Catholic and then finish up 10 of 18 for 110 yards on the game. I mean, that's brutal. That shows me that maybe they're trying to run their way out of trouble. They had 30 carries for 94 yards. You know, so we're talking about a lot of three and outs.
True.
I think their longest run was 8 yards. You know,
and you can't win now.
Yeah, there were games this year where 8 yards would have been their shortest run. So you know that they definitely have to get the passing game going, especially if it's a situation where they're gonna get. They're going to get down. They did turn the ball over, I think, 3 times against Yuma Catholic, which, you know, that's not going to help your cause at all. But, you know, Yuma Catholic kind of got hot at the right time, and Castile really faced their first legitimate opponent. Castile has the advantage of being the team that's able to adjust now. Yuma Catholic had this issue last year when they beat Northwest Christian, and then in the playoffs, Northwest Christian made some adjustments. They ended up blowing out Yuma Catholic, I think, like 55-0. So you really never know. It is still a young team in Castile. You know, we'll find out if they belong on the field. I'm not super happy with how the matchup worked out. I really thought that they maybe did enough to get to the 8th seed, but I did predict this the night before when I made my playoff predictions. I did think it was going to be 8-9 with Castile traveling to Yuma Catholic. I don't know, Chili, do you think they can pull this off?
I don't know. It depends on how much growth the team has actually done since that Yuma Catholic loss. I mean, they've piled up like 200-plus points while only giving up 15. But when you look at the strength of that schedule, mm-hmm. they've been playing the Powder Puffs and the YMCA All-Stars. And like,
which is why they didn't get over number 9.
Right, which shows why they didn't make it higher up in the rankings. But they did take that L to Yuma. So they know what it's like to lose, and they know what it's like to play big competition, because a lot of people are predicting that Yuma might actually win the state championship. So I think it's possible, but I think it's a very, very remote possibility.
And if you're in Castile's locker room, all you got to do is look around at a bunch of other sophomores and say, we're not even supposed to be here.
Correct.
We are not even supposed to be here. So let's just go out, do what we can, do what we're coached to do, do what Coach Stowers has taught us all year long, and see if it works. Because we're not even supposed to be playing varsity football, and here we are taking on who I consider to be one of the top three teams in this division.
That's right.
Who is probably down at an 8th seed because of Seton Catholic,
mm-hmm.
You know, beating them earlier in the season. So if I'm a Castile, I look around and say, like, hey, you know, that we're going to go out there and show them why they shouldn't have let us into the party this year. And that's really all they can do.
Yuma Catholic, indeed, a very tough number 8 seed. They haven't lost since Seton Catholic beat them on September 9th. 7 straight for the Shamrocks. They give up just 10 points a game. The last time they didn't make at least the second round of the playoffs was 2006. The Seton Catholic Sentinels. Their season comes to a conclusion after losing to the Higley Knights 66-17. They were outmatched from the very beginning as it was a 22-0 game after a quarter and 51-10 Higley at the half. Chile, while they had a much better season than in 2015, there's still some things to work on at 1150 North Dobson.
Higley had the recipe. You bottle up New Wade County, and you hold him to 23 yards rushing, and just let everybody run wild, including my man, Jacob Terrell. Went off for 200 yards and 1 touchdown, but clearly not enough. The key to stopping Seton was to, you know, shut down Nick Wade. Don't let him get loose. Make sure that he's uncomfortable, and that's what happened. 23 yards on like 19 carries, averaged less than 2 yards a carry, but he did get a touchdown. The sophomore is going to be electric, though, in the future.
And that's just it. So it feels like we're talking about this team being young every year, but they did replenish, and they're going to have some talented juniors. I think Jacob Hansel, big yep. wide receiver, you know, he's going to be back. He's going to be a junior. He'll be playing. They had Thomas Larson starting all year. When he figures things out, he's going to be great in the defensive backfield. You guys keep bringing up Nick Wade.
Wade County!
He has a chance at a 1,000-yard mm-hmm. season next year if they can get Definitely. The line right. Yep. And I mean, they're still going to be playing this tough schedule. But some of the teams, you know, are going to be graduating a lot of players, and they might just be able to time it right. And then quarterback Vincent Wallace is really going to have to step in. And, you know, there are 3 Seton Catholic quarterbacks playing college football right now. You know, not necessarily sure if Forrest Sweet will end up being the 4th, but he could. You have great connections out there at Seton Catholic. If he's not, maybe Vincent Wallace is the next guy. And so there is some promise there. I think next year is extremely important before they reorganize all these divisions again for them to prove themselves at this level.
And Vincent Wallace did have 300 yards passing against a very, very tough Higley team. I know Higley kind of piled up the points, and I know Seton probably had to throw late in the game. Sure. But, I mean, he still did complete 17 of 30, 300-plus yards passing. I think the future is bright over there at Seton Catholic.
2-8 a year ago, 4-6 this season. We'd like to see the upswing pattern continue, and hopefully we'll be able to have Gary Gallant on the show next season. We certainly appreciate what you do. Let's move on to the Basha Bears. They fall 49-29 to the Perry Pumas in the regular season finale. It was a rough one, although they hung with the Pumas for as long as they could. This was a back-and-forth first half. Ryan Kelly and Brock Purdy each had long touchdown runs. For Kelly, his was a 20-yarder on a 4th-and-15, and after the first 24 minutes of play, it was 21-17 Perry. Already without the Goodman brothers, Kelly couldn't go in half number 2, and that's when Purdy and the Pumas took over. Nate James on the receiving end of 2 touchdowns on his way to over 1,000 yards, and we talked with the guy they call the Gunslinger. That's Brock Purdy.
Wow, 49-29, you beat your arch rivals. Take us through the game. It all started with a running touchdown by yourself.
Sir, shout out to the linemen. I mean, without them, none of this is possible, and they just open up gaps for not just me, but the running backs as well. And they set up the passing game, and Nate James made plays. Our running backs ran their tail off and just came out with the team win.
Talk about the offensive game plan. You mentioned Nate James, and obviously Colby Dickey got into that. The intangibles, how do you guys click?
They're just great athletes, and whenever I'm scrambling or just normal routes, they're just there. It's just repetition over and over at practice, and just in the game, we just apply it in.
Was there a hangover after last week? And I don't mean drinking, but you guys beat Hamilton, and then here you are, have to get up for your arch rival, a team that had a losing record on the road. What was practice week like?
Yeah, it was a little different. I mean, we beat Hamilton, and everyone was hype about everything, but we knew that Bash is a good team, and just because of what the record was, that didn't really show how they played and everything, and they came out here, and, you know, it was a good game at first, and then, I mean, yeah.
You're a humble guy. You missed the first few games of the season. Give props to yourself. You came back in game 3 or 4, and here you are. You led your team to a 9-1 record. The best is yet to come.
Yes, sir. I just stuck with God and just kept sticking with him. And throughout the season so far, just great things have been happening. And shout out to the coaches and the team. And just the team's been helping me out so much. So without them, I'm nothing.
And I think great things are ahead of you. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Ralph will definitely hit on both sides of this game. We knew going in it was going to be a tall order for Bashett to win this one without the Goodman brothers, but Kelly played his heart out and Collins filled in admirably.
Yeah, and that's somebody that Ryan Kelly speaks really highly of. Ryan Kelly's not really the type of kid to talk to you about his own play. But if you ask him about somebody on his team, all of a sudden you can't shut him up. And this is one of those players that he has a lot of positive things to say about. And I feel very positively about as well. We watched Collins play, you know, a game where they got their first win of the year over Desert Mountain. He ends up winning the Arizona Cardinals Player of the Week. You know, and he's the backup. He's not mm-hmm. he's not the star attraction or anything like that. And so, you know, there's definitely a future there. We'll just see how everything shakes out for Bash. I know they get the Goodman brothers back this week, which is really important. The interesting thing about this is the 15 through 21 all lose. AIA formula looks at it and says Bash had the hardest schedule. They get in at 3-7. So now you have a team that is 6-15 over the last two seasons, but is on back-to-back playoff appearances. And you just, you know, I don't necessarily know what to say about that or if that's a good thing, you know. So if social media is any indication, they all expect Bashia to get stomped. The vibe that I got from Bashia was that they were done playing and had zero expectation mm-hmm. that they would kind of backdoor themselves Correct. Into the playoffs. But you can bet that Ryan Kelly's going to prepare and Jonathan Nathaniel's going to prepare and they'll be ready to go. They are going to be missing one offensive lineman who threw a few punches. Yes. And he's suspended for this week. So,
and that's the one thing I definitely, before we even get into the playoff preview scenario, we're all at the game, and I didn't like what I saw on the Bashia sidelines as time was expiring. I don't even mean necessarily the last seconds ticked off. There was a lot of bickering. They were just very unorganized. Granted, it's a lot of frustration.
Yeah.
But you hate to see that in a season. Well, it's obviously not season ending yet.
Yeah.
But it was just tough to watch.
They celebrated the fight. They used it to pump up the crowd. That was unseemly. I mean, I would have probably laughed about it if I was 17.
Right. Yes, that's right. Yes.
But knowing in that time that, you know, you're getting embarrassed by your rival on your home field in what is a lot of your senior seasons,
mm-hmm.
Celebrating that a guy threw a few punches into a face mask, which again, you know, your hand loses that fight.
Right. That's right.
And it was the player he was hitting had a strip sack the play before. So, you know, It's one of those situations where, you know, maybe you're looking for one small thing you can celebrate. Maybe you hate your rival that much. But it looked stupid.
It did. And
it really looked stupid. And it might have been fun and felt fun in the moment. You know, I've heard that this is the last kid in the world that they'd expect to do something like that. And so, you know, maybe they were all just having a laugh and a good time with it. But you're, you know, if you do something like that and you're down 20 to your little brother on your home field, it's gonna come off as a retroactive reason why you're down 20 to your rival on your home field. You're gonna watch them celebrating over there and be like, well, that makes sense. And I don't necessarily like to see that from Bashia or say that about Bashia.
Correct. I'm with you on that.
But you did just get jack stomped by Perry, and you have to live with that forever. That in your senior season you went 3-7 and you lost Perry by 20. So, you know, I guess celebrate a few punches to the face mask and let that be your legacy. But I'm not impressed.
Correct, yeah. I'm with you on that. Chili's chomping at the bit. What you got, buddy?
Nothing, man. Shout out to Perry. They delivered, much the way that I'm going much to have to do the same with some pizza. Shout out to Christian Zendejas and Nate James and the whole coaching staff, including Preston Jones.
The cover photo for this week's episode will be Chili in a Perry hat.
Yeah, they crowned me officially. It's a good group. And the thing that I love the most is I've been tough on Perry for the last 6 weeks, even with their hot start, even especially when they made the quarterback change. And they were able to kind of... I don't know. It just kind of seemed they were able to kind of rally around the perceived negativity that I was putting on them.
And I definitely want us to talk about that leading into the Valley Vista game. But where I want to get your thoughts, just that offense. You've seen the James boys go to work. You've seen Brock Purdy slinging guns all over the place.
So
as I say that in a good way.
As soon as Chandler Hamilton got out of hand and TJ Green made it the TJ Green show, and we'll get to that later.
Yeah.
Me and Ralph left, and we went over to Perry and Basha, watched the Battle of Al Vista for my first time ever, and Nate James caught a touchdown pass immediately in the corner of the end zone. And as if I had not seen it happen, he did it again about four plays later.
Sure.
So, you know, the Perry team, like, they're good, man. You know, no disrespect to Basha. Basha was just outplayed. I know Kelly got injured.
And that's a good way to put it. They were outplayed. Absolutely.
You know, I know they were missing a couple boys on offense. They lost their cool at the end. Shout out to Joven Sweat from Perry. You know, he kept his cool because a lot of players wouldn't have. And I caught up with him after the game, and, you know, they were elated. And he had some very, very bold predictions for Perry's future. You got to check that out on ArizonaVarsity.com. I highly advise subscribing just for the one video. I think everybody in Chandler, within the confines of Chandler, needs to hear the bold predictions.
Interesting.
That he makes.
It's funny.
I'm going to leave it at that. It was a great team. They played incredible. Mm-hmm. And I promise I'm going to get those pizzas though.
And speaking of playing incredible, the Bears' next opponent is the Chandler Wolves. Wow. Chandler 63, Hamilton 28. Okay, it's time for numbers. Jacob Conover, sophomore QB, 19 of 23 for 215 yards and 3 touchdown passes. Nice. Ryan Johnson on the ground, 116 yards and a pair of TDs. Nice. Then you get to TJ Green. 307 yards rushing, a total of 4 touchdowns. You guys were at the game. I'm going to start off with you, Ralph. Nice is putting it mildly.
Well, our writer Jordan Knight was there, and I don't think Hamilton wants him coming around anymore because I think he's been to 5 Hamilton games, and they're 1-4 this year in those games. It was close in the first half. You know, we threw that
21 apiece, I thought, at one point.
It was 21-21 when, Jordan broke off a run and showcased some of his speed, and then there was almost a sack in the end zone, which would have made it a safety, gave Hamilton the ball back and gave them a chance to score, but they didn't rule it a safety. Chandler ended up punting from their own end zone and holding Hamilton, so they weren't really able to do anything there or capitalize on the momentum. And then in the third quarter, TJ Green just came out, had a 77-yard run for a touchdown. Just looked stronger as the game went on. We saw Conover with a touchdown run to the corner, showed he had some speed, and it just got absolutely out of hand. And I don't feel like Chandler was pouring it on. I just felt like everything they were doing in the second half was working. This was an eye-opening performance from Chandler and from Hamilton. It really looked like they had a good game plan, and then when they got back from halftime, any of those butterflies that were sort of carrying them and giving them energy just sort of went out the window, and that TJ Green touchdown, I think, took the air out of their tires pretty early on.
The season as a whole, I think, for Hamilton has been tough. It's been a season of blown opportunities. Early in the first half, Hamilton had an opportunity, a very deep pass to C.J. Jarman, and it was dropped. He completely lost his defender, who slipped and fell, and it was just dropped. If he would have caught it, it would have been a touchdown, and I think Hamilton would have actually taken the lead at that point, or they would have already been tied. They would have had opportunities to put themselves in a position to be leading possibly at halftime, you know, or just have a lot of momentum in the game. And it's just unfortunate. They're just not getting those breaks this year, whether it's at Brophy or whether it's, you know,
Against Perry.
Wherever it is, against whoever, they're just not getting the breaks. In the past, they've been known to, you know, get the timely fumble recovery against Centennial. Just make the plays that need to be made, and it's just not going their way this year. Chandler, they're getting everything.
Right, sure.
TJ, green light. Green light means go, and that's all he does. Touches the ball, gone. 70-yard touchdown. And it's a backbreaker.
Oh, yeah. No, it seems to be that.
Breaker.
Yeah. Now, I ask you this. Let me ask you. Going back to the Hamilton Huskies and both you guys, is there anything positive that the Huskies can take away from that game this past Friday?
That they can hang for a half, right?
That they hung for a half because, quite honestly, I think a lot of media thought that they were going to get blown out from jump. I think a lot of people expected
Chandler to score. Because when I saw the score 14-0 initially, like, oh, wow. Okay,
and they fought back. Right. And they fought back with a lot of Hamilton pride. Chance Brewington caught a touchdown early on, and he had that, like, Keith Poole thing going on, like, what? What are y'all going to do to stop me? And I love it. The Hamilton swag is there a little bit. They came out to some Tupac Hail Mary, kind of, I don't know, supposedly stealing Chandler's intro music. But, man, when Hamilton has their swag going, it works. They just lost it and came out deflated in the second half, and I don't know why.
Well, we've got Chuck Constantino with us, who has seen the Hamilton Huskies opponent quite a few times this week. Chuck, first off, welcome to the C-Town Rivals podcast, and let's kind of jump right into it. What do the Tucson Badgers bring to the table against the Huskies?
Well, first, I'd like to say thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure. I give you guys a listen all the time. But, what was the question? Sorry, I'm fucking...
Sure, what's the strength of the Tucson Badgers? Clearly, this is not a team that Hamilton has seen in a very long time, or any team in this area, so we're definitely looking forward to seeing what their strength is.
Alright. So Tucson High is a team that wants to use its athletes. Alright? They're the largest school in Tucson, and fortunately, they have a lot of multi-sport athletes. So what they're going to want to do, at least on the offensive side of the ball, is get the ball in their playmakers' hands and let them go. And so it's a little bit of a problem. It's not a problem, but it's kind of a little bit of a mixture. The quarterback, he's a senior, George Flores. He's in his third year as a starter, actually. He's got a huge cannon of an arm. Huge cannon. So the coaches have had... little bit of a difficult time to get in his head that, you know, despite you having this huge arm, you know, sometimes you only got to throw it out to the flat and we'll pick up 20. It's just it's the same as you throwing a huge bomb. So they want to get out in space, use their speed. That's kind of where they match up with some of these Phoenix schools. Well, you know, they have a lot of track kids. They have DJ Hinton, who is a transfer from South Point. He has had the fastest recorded 40 time in the state for the past 2 years at 4.6. So he's a guy that actually the University of Nevada just called about him this week. They want him to play running back, and they're talking no red shirt. So he's got speed, and you know, these are they got some speed on the outside too. But DJ Hinton is the guy that, you know, if I'm Hamilton, I'm looking at all week.
Hey Chuck, it's Ralph. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How are you, bud?
Not bad, not bad. So, not a lot of people know this, but you are actually following Tucson all year as part of a documentary for ArizonaVarsity.com, which is what the C-Town Rivals podcast is also part of. Just give us a little bit on what some of the most interesting things, maybe interesting players that have stuck out during your time following them around.
Well, this is true, Ralph. This is week 14 for me. We're actually being with Tucson High. I mean, some of the kids, unfortunately, have called me coach, so I've gotten used to that. But, yeah, I've been tracking. I've been going to every single practice, meeting. The only thing, you know, I missed about maybe 2 days over 14 weeks, one for a doctor's visit. You know, they have a 6 a.m. yoga time. Or 7 a.m. yoga time on Wednesday mornings that I can't quite make it to because I like my sleep. But, you know, it's been very interesting. We discussed the possibility of doing the documentary, and Tucson High was a program that piqued my interest because, first of all, it's the oldest school in the state. They have about a little over 3,000 kids here, and, you know, it's an inner-city school. A lot of the A lot of the kids come from single-parent homes, and so that kind of drew my interest. Coach Hargraves is in his sixth year here, and he's had a lot of success. This is his fourth season in the playoffs. You know, they were a team that was on the cusp of doing something last year, and they had a lot of overturn. And this year there's 35 seniors, so I just kind of wanted to follow them and kind of see, you know, is this the best it gets? And what goes into a high school football season? What are the sacrifices that some of these kids have to make? And so just leading off of that, I mean, the first kid that jumps out to you, I mean, from the first day of filming, he's just very charismatic. His name is Brian Lopez. He's a senior linebacker for Tucson High. He's a middle linebacker. He's been playing on varsity since he was a freshman. Tucson High, he bleeds. If you cut his arm, he'll bleed red and white. This kid, he is a captain. I mean, in my opinion, 4 inches taller. He's getting calls from all the Pac-12 schools. He's a kid that each year he'll probably tally over 100 tackles, but he's also the voice of the defense. He's the voice of the team. He's an emotional leader. He's a guy, you know, rah-rah. He's a guy that will break a joke. He's a guy that's leading them in stretches. He is the heartbeat of Tucson High this year. And the team goes as he goes. And, you know, he's never a guy you have to worry about bringing the juice or the energy Friday nights or all through the practice. He's probably a coach's dream. Coach Hargraves has raved about him all year. He is just a player. I think he'll be playing Saturday somewhere. The problem is not too many schools want a 5'9 middle linebacker. But he, you know, if you're going to be at the game Friday night, you're going to hear his name called. That's the first kid that, you know.
Well, hey, let me jump in really quick because I want to – one thing I really want to get to is what their reaction was when they found out they were playing Hamilton.
Okay. So that's the thing. So – they get Hamilton, and it's just as you expect. Oh, wow, Hamilton. Hamilton. It's Hamilton, you know? And despite, I mean, Hamilton is a great program. Don't get me wrong. I do not want to give anyone any bulletin material. Hamilton is a great program. But, you know, it's not the Hamilton of 10 years ago. It's not the Hamilton of even 5 years ago. So the kids' reaction was, it's Hamilton. The coach's reaction was, okay, it's Hamilton. We could do some things. The coaches were expecting to maybe get a Mesa Skyline, so they're surprised that Hamilton didn't really move. So again, Hamilton, the kids, you know, there's some anxiousness, there's some nervousness, just because of the name. Hamilton still, not strikes fear, but, you know, they're going to lift their eyebrows a little bit. Like, okay, we got Hamilton this week. And so I asked the kids what some of the guys around school are saying. And, you know, school, it's, oh, you guys are going to get stomped. You're going to get crushed. So it's kind of been with this, you know, like, let's block everyone out. And the mindset of the team right now, they seem confident. They seem positive. You know, they don't. This doesn't feel like a team. You know, I've been following them for 14 weeks. This does not feel like a team that's ready to hand in their equipment next week. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, the coaches were, you know, they're happy with that. They're okay with the draw. They know Hamilton's had some problems in the secondary. But they also recognize the threat that they pose, you know. I think they counted out 17 offensive different formations they run. So, you know, that's a lot of breaking down film, and that's a lot of practice. They had to work on different formations, and so it'll be a handful, and honestly, I think it's going to be a way closer game than people might think.
Wow, Chuck, that's interesting. It's chilly right now, so I'm curious. So Tucson High has kind of beat all the teams that they're supposed to beat, and they...
Yeah, now that you ask Coach, he thinks they should have beat Mountain View, but go on.
And they've kind of lost to the teams that you would kind of expect them to lose to, give or take Mountain View. What do you think is going to be the outcome of this game, personally?
So, personally, you know, the mindset of the team when they were playing Desert Ridge in week 3 was, I didn't see any nervousness or anything. The kids were, you know, kind of stoked. I mean, I don't think in week 3, a pretty good team this year. Now all the way now to week 11. You know, I see this team. They're a couple plays away here and there in some of their losses. If you look at them, the game against Desert Ridge, they're a turnover away or two from winning that game. Desert Ridge goes up 14-0 because the first touchdown drive they got to go 10 yards, and the second they got to go 30. So you know, you spun them two touchdowns early. You know, not too many teams are going to climb out of that hole with the offense and running at the clock that Desert Ridge likes to do. So, you know, now leading to this game, there's, like I said, there's a couple concerns with some kids, but I think there's a belief, and I think that this team, I think they can do it. It's just a matter of, I mean, like with most teams, you got to take care of the ball. You can't beat yourself with penalties and miscommunication. I know Hamilton, their quarterback's young, but he's got a big arm. I know they got a couple of guys you got to stop, including number 25 in the backfield. So, if Hamilton, I mean, the thing is, Tucson High has been a team that's been started slow all year. And all of their wins, I believe, they did not score first. You may have to double check that. But they're a second half team. So, it's a thing. Can they afford to be a second-half team against Hamilton? They got the athletes to compete with them, I believe. Clearly not the depth, but if it's a trap race, and you got guys like DJ Hinton and you know, Tyree Pearson making plays down the field and getting big chunks of yards, it's going to be a very interesting game.
Who's the key to success for Tucson? Not talking about the Floreses and the Hintons and the linebacker there. You're talking about Lopez. Who's the one that the X factor, the guy that we're not expecting?
Okay, so I'm gonna give you two kids. One kid that you're not gonna expect, but you watch him play Friday night, you're gonna say, okay, I'm gonna start him for next year. It's a junior. He goes by the name of Bear. He's got. It's pretty funny. He goes by the name of Bear because they call him like a teddy bear. He's a big junior, 6'4", kid on the defensive line. His cleats are, he's got bears on his cleats. But I'm sorry, I'm blanking on the name. Everyone just calls him Bear. I'm blanking on the name. But he's a 6'4 guy. They like to use him at inside, outside, kind of stuff to run. He's a guy next year that may play stand up on the outside and be a 6'4 edge rusher, but this year they move him inside. So if he is able to do what he's a guy that sometimes lets you get a little overzealous and will shoot the gap when maybe he shouldn't, or you know, not contain when he shouldn't. But you know, if he's a guy that just does his role and plays that strong side, and just, you know, keeps Adams at bay. He's going to be a guy I would look for, but, the guy that I want to see step up, and he's been injured until the Sunnyside game. He came back. Beto, he's a guy that plays free safety for them, number 9. He's a senior. He's long, not too tall. He's about 6'1", free safety, but he's not afraid to stick his helmet in there. And he's a guy that, you know, you're playing a guy in Adams, the running back for Hamilton, that, you know, you're going to need a couple guys to tackle him. And so if they could get a free safety up there and tackle him and play in the box if he needs to, and he's a very good coverage guy, almost came up with a couple picks last week, a bunch of passes batted down, he's a guy that I would look at. So number 9 and number 74 for guys that are going to look up the roster on Max Preps later.
Well, thank you so much, Chuck, for jumping on the podcast, giving us a preview of what Hamilton can expect when they host Tucson on Friday night in the first round, 6 versus an 11 seed. I hope you make it up here safe and look forward to seeing you.
Hey, real quick before I go, can I get your prediction?
Ooh. I'm gonna say Hamilton wins it only because only because of their offensive line, but I do think it'll be a high-scoring game. I see Tucson scoring at least three times.
Yeah, Coach Harder did mention those big boys up front. They're very big, so he wants to try and, you know, utilize their speed this week. So that'll be one of the matchups to watch this week, to see if that defensive line can do anything and get in the gaps and disrupt something in the backfield. So thanks for having me, man.
No problem, Chuck. We'll talk to you soon.
Friday night, I assume.
Yep.
And you have to go all the way back to September 16th, 2005 to find the last matchup of these two teams. John Wren was in charge of the Huskies back then and led them to a 51-14 road win. Basher 3-7 and Chandler 8-2. Fellas, Chandler took down Basher 59-37 earlier this season, and even assuming the Bears are at full strength, although we already talked about they'll be down one lineman, the Wolves have a track record against Basher, and Ralph, as we've talked about it consistently, it all began with the second half of their 2012 meeting.
You were there.
I was, yes.
Before we met.
And little did I know it would translate into what we continue to see here. That was my first ever high school football game in Arizona.
Yeah, I think Chandler had a running back named Brandon Jenkins. I could be getting that wrong, but they just gave him the ball over and over. He was injured for most of the season, but they in that half, he became a Wolves legend. You know, they gave him the ball over and over and over again, clawed their way back. Daryl Garrettson, you know, ends up getting Chandler a win. That would ultimately help Deontay Sykes on his quest to be the only player that has ever beaten all four CUSD major schools. And then ever since then, it's just been, you know, beat down after beat down after beat down. But Chandler has a weakness this year, and Basha has a strength in that area, and that's over the top. So, you know, Basha can draw blood. They did in the previous matchup, even though Chandler scored on their first five drives, and there was nothing really Basha could even do on the defensive side of the ball. But they can draw blood, and you never know. That's why you have to play the game. Basha,
because in the grand scheme of things, 59-37 is not that bad considering what Chandler's been doing to people recently.
And Basha, again, can look around and be like, we're not even supposed to be here, so let's just go out there and do whatever. But Chandler is probably at their best when they are expected to blow a team out. So I don't really know what to say other than to, you know, enjoy your pregame meal. I hope
death row.
Man,
I just hope they get something nice. I mean, and they're going to be in this part of town, so why not make it some Elmers or some Floridinos? You know, why
and I'll
not?
Say,
it's
I mean,
a long drive out to Southeast Chandler, bro. That's where you live.
Yeah,
it's far. It's far. Maybe if Val Vista looped around, you know, that. I'm just saying, it's far. So, if Basha, you know, is going to have any success, it's going to have to be them going over the top, and then the defense is going to have to generate some turnovers and keep Chandler from starting hot.
Bash's best hope right now is that they play the perfect game a la Villanova. Ryan Kelly throws for 400 plus yards.
Were you even alive when that Villanova game
but I hear a lot about it. So Ryan Kelly throws for 400 plus yards. Terrell Brown catches a cool 150. Ty Sifferman comes up with another 100, which isn't out of the realm of possibility.
No,
since the last time they played, Terrell Brown caught for 222.
Mm-hmm.
And Sifferman caught for 100. So that's not asking too much right now. Also, hope that the Goodman boys come out playing some mad football.
Yes.
Come out ready to play. The one catches for 100, and the other one rushes for a cool 150. Those things happen.
Yeah.
Basha could, you know, see themselves in the game late.
Because as we say, anytime you have Ryan Kelly under center, you have a chance.
I don't want to bet against Ryan Kelly.
No.
Not
I
ever.
Will say, though, it is tough to see. And I'm very glad they made the postseason. I'm actually elated, actually. But three wins this year, four last year, like we touched on. It's tough over there. It's just very tough, and that's not necessarily a good situation.
I'm not going to bet against Ryan Kelly. I'm definitely not betting against TJ Green, Ryan Johnson, and Johnny Yams either. Shout out to Johnny Yams for the Oregon offer I heard about.
It's a big deal. It's a big deal.
And, you know, I'm hoping it works out a situation where other Pac-12 schools are interested. But anyways, I'm not betting against those boys either. But what I am saying is it's really nice to see Ryan Kelly get this opportunity on Arizona's most beautiful football field. Austin Field with the Jumbotron thing going on. It's going to be amazing. Yes. I really hope that my boss Ralph sends me out there.
We'll see.
A lot of good games.
Terrell Brown, though, he has a legitimate shot to end, you know, if they don't get past Chandler, to end with 20. He needs 117 receiving yards to have 2,600 career. That's not nice. Bad for a basketball player.
Very
One
true.
More touchdown to hit 25, six more catches to hit 170.
I foresee all of those happening.
Yeah, in high school, that's a massive career.
Hey, this is a passing of the torch game. Ryan Kelly to Jacob Conover. This could possibly be the passing of the torch game.
Yes, absolutely. The Perry Pumas, they indeed claim the number 3 seed in 6A football with a 9-1 record. They've got the 7-3 Valley Vista Monsoon at home this weekend in round one. Chili, Perry has a total of 1 playoff football win in school history. I can't imagine they don't get win number 2 this week.
You know, I promised Perry one thing. I promised Perry one thing after, well, two things. That I would get them their pizzas. And the second thing was that I was going to continue to bet against them. So I am going to go with Valley Vista this week just because I don't want to ruin their beautiful season. Sometimes, you know, when the media switches sides, bad things happen. So, you know, out of respect for Preston Jones and all that they've accomplished so far this year, I want to see them accomplish more. I'm going with the Monsoon. I think it's going to be, you know, Monsoon Madness here in Arizona. So, you know, I'm going to go ahead and do the wrong thing and pick the Monsoon. Go ahead, guys, roast me.
Chili and his wacky self. But then again, folks, that's Chili for you. But, yes, I don't foresee the Perry Pumas having a problem in round one. I do think the rematch potentially with them in Hamilton would be a good game. Anytime we have two inner city schools playing one another, much like we talked about Chandler Bashir, it sort of it increases interest, it hypes us up, and we know you're all about hype.
True. I mean, you know, they did already run Val Vista once this year, so I mean,
well, there you say go.
They can't do it again.
They're waiting on their pizza.
Valley Vista has a really good offensive tackle. His name's Creston Coolidge. You're going to want to try to get to the quarterback and disrupt them. Start fast like you usually do. Perry has a good chance to put this away, pack some starters away, believe it or not, and try to escape without injury and mentally prepare for either a Hamilton team that has, you know, revenge on the brain, or quite possibly because they are very similar in nature to Chandler, minus the offensive line talent and massive coaching staff and freshman and JV program. But they are similar to the Chandler High that I went to and played for, Tucson High, which is filled with great athletes. Could get past Hamilton, and you could actually be getting a visit from Tucson in week two. So either way, I think they're going on to round two and going to have to really prepare themselves for that challenge. I think they get past Valley Vista easily.
This is the playoff, folks. We're looking forward to really going all the way with all of you guys. He's Ralph. He's Chili. I'm Brett. We're out.